Hey everybody, welcome back to Issues, the comic podcast so old we've been through, what, three deaths and rebirths of Gwen Stacy now? And yeah. that's not a joke, people, that's just fucking sad.
What, oh, wait, there's only three?
He may be forgetting one.
I'm not counting the clones. I'm not counting the clones.
Okay, well then that's, yeah, that fixes that.
Oh,
issue.
Yeah, that helps.
I'm your host, Jason. With me tonight's the actual full gang. We got Dick.
Hey.
Daryl.
Hey there. Marvel Comics, the only company with more clones than fucking Lucasfilm.
Oh, God. And Jamie.
Hey,
All right, tonight's comic. Actually, one of the classic Marvel graphic novel series, which were always great. You had about a 90-ish page comic. You know, one self-contained story, always big headliners, good artists. You know, it was a solid little experimental format where people could go outside the lines a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight's is number 49, Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom, Triumphant Torment. Honestly, second only to Death of Captain Marvel. Like, this was one of my all-time favorite comics. What did you guys think?
Just knowing the character Dr. Doom and getting to see this side of him and this whole experience with Strange and everything and kind of understanding this whole mysticism thing, it just blew me away. I loved it. I being an outsider to comics, I knew that there was, you know, magic and things and these cosmic beings and stuff, but I've never gotten to experience it this rawly, you know. That's not really touched on in the comics I have experience with, and so it's just really interesting seeing this side of Marvel where it touches on the occult and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Marvel's always had a very rich occult world, but due to the mainstream nature, quote-unquote, of the comics of the time, it really wasn't brought up outside of Doctor Strange's own solo series and sometimes Thor. But this literally went balls deep with Marvel Occult.
Now, I really dug it because it was kind of cool to see some establishing stuff take place in this book, you know? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the book that kind of established Strange as Sorcerer Supreme, right?
Yep.
And also, we kind of learned a little bit about Doom's backstory, not just pretty much his motivations, you know, for becoming the ruler of Latveria, and you know, some things like, you know, his ego being so big that it led him to be scarred even more so than he was. Like, his original scarring was kind of like just, you know, very minor. But his ego was so out of control that, you know, he has his mask placed on him while it's still fresh out of the fire and everything, and it leads to even worse scarring and stuff. And it was just kind of neat to see, you know, some of that kind of world building stuff come into play, stuff that, you know, I really had no idea about, that I, you know, it was stuff that I took for granted because it was part of the comics lore when I grew up reading them. But it was kind of neat to see that stuff kind of come into fruition and whatnot. So.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the most important things in this comic is it really does establish Doom as the anti-villain of the Marvel Universe. Because I think for most people have just a passing knowledge of Doom or even a low engagement knowledge that they haven't read up of him very much. They are they've only seen like the crappy Fantastic Four movies,
right?
You'd expect that Doctor Doom would be more of a Lex Luthor type villain, but he really isn't. There's such a noble underpinning to Doom that really is what's kind of unique,
absolutely,
to comics, especially at the time.
I'm in full agreement with that. That was also one of the more unique things, you know, learning. Like, his motivation for this comic is very personal and very, you know, it's identifiable and relatable. And like you said, he comes off, you know, he comes off very arrogant, but he also comes off very human, too, so.
But before we get much further than this, I think we should give the audience a quick rundown of the events of the comic. So the whole thing starts off with this old dude, like Dawn of Humanity, who is somehow still alive and kicking, by the name of Age Genghis. He pulls people together, a bunch of magic users together, before the entire Vishanti Ashtar. I can't remember all three of them, man.
Ashtar, Varala, and Agamotto?
Yeah. I think the second one's not right, but you get the idea. So we bring them together, give them a challenge, and it says whoever wins this challenge is the Sorcerer Supreme. And up until then, Estrange had only assumed the mantle as, you know, the successor to the Ancient One. This would have cemented him as officially the Sorcerer Supreme. But the interesting thing is there's one final entrant in this competition, and that's Doctor Doom. Yes, it's Hoggoth, not Farala. That was the Vishanti, yes. But yeah, what a lot of people don't know about Doom is he has a very deep background in magic. And at one point, had come into contact with Age Genghis himself and kind of slapped down an old man, which isn't cool. But... So this challenge is Age Genghis gets trapped in a giant crystal structure. And the first person to get him out is the Sorcerer Supreme. Everybody tries, you know, the frontal attacks and shit. None of them work and wind up turning them pretty much like feral antagonistic versions of themselves. So they attack, you know, who's left. Until Strange decides to astral project himself, gets up to the crystal and says, wait, really can't be this easy. Touches the crystal with his astral form and asks him to come out. And wins. That's all he had to do.
And it really was the whole point the Vishanti wanted to stress upon people, is that the Sorcerer Supreme has to know when to use force and when to use more subtle means.
And I think my favorite part is during this whole thing, while the whole thing's going down, Doom is just sitting there and he's recording everything with his mask and just learning the whole time and becoming a better sorcerer. Because when he first gets there, he says, I don't know shit about sorcery. I just happened to hear you say you needed people to show up.
Well, no. He does know a good deal. He didn't think himself on that level, though.
And he was challenged by Khalid that he was bringing technological resources, which were against the rules. And so he actually agreed to take the gauntlets off, which depowered the systems for controlling sorcery through the armor. But he did not agree to power down the other sources, the infrared scanner in his eyes.
Right, which is how he was able to follow some of the attacks and stuff. He was able to see the infrared spectrum, you know, and move accordingly. So, you know.
But yeah, kinda cool. So Strange has declared the winner and says he must grant, the winner is given a boon or something like that. And Strange thinks he's being given this gift. What he has to do is grant a boon to the people who stood on his level, of which in that competition there was only one, and that's Doom. So Doom says, I have something I've been wanting to do as long as I can remember. My mother once traded her soul to the devil for power, and then wound up dying, and yeah.
Mephisto.
Well, yeah, they don't name him until, they just say nebulously the devil, until Strange takes Doom down to hell, and there's Mephisto with Doom's mother's soul, and basically says, you know, bring it. So Doom and Strange proceed to take on demons and eventually Mephisto himself until Doom pulls his master stroke and betrays Stephen Strange to Mephisto and turns him over. At which point Doom's mother calls him a traitor and turns her back on him. And that is the act that redeems her soul. So that Mephisto cannot touch it ever again. So Doom, realizing this, starts basically, you know, groveling to Mephisto for a moment. Not really groveling, because Doom does not grovel, but you know, he's doing his Doom thing, and Strange hits a button that Doom had left in his hand that released him from how he was captured, and then basically they both get the hell out of hell. With Doom saying, you know, being able to say he beat the devil.
Yeah.
And Strange cemented as Sorcerer Supreme.
Well, the distinction is, actually, doesn't Mephisto kind of banish them from hell?
Oh, yeah, he kicks them out.
Yeah, he's like, be gone, and fucking just banishes them the hell out of there.
Because he knew that he had no dominion over either Strange nor Doom's souls. Yes. And yet, Doom had just cost Mephisto a soul that he held dear. He attacked Mephisto's fucking ego hard.
Mm-hmm. And in, you know, kind of in conclusion, Doom basically kind of gave up the love of his mother to save her soul. And it's kind of, you know, hypothesized, you know, that he knew that might be the outcome, but that he was okay with it.
You know, yeah, he was willing to sacrifice himself if need be, because that's the only cause he felt would be worth his sacrifice.
Right. Above and beyond even his beloved Latveria. You know?
Now, I think now we got the plot of the way, I think there's something we really need to address. This fucking artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Mignola or whatever. Hellboy, man. Hellboy. You know? Great artist. Great with the occulty kind of stuff. Very dark. I've always loved his shit, you know?
And this is definitely kind of pre-Hellboy. So he's, you know, you can see shades of that art style, you know, in this stuff, especially as the way he renders Mephisto. But this is definitely, like, it's kind of neat to see, you know, that kind of evolving art style, you know, coming out in this book.
And I have to say, pretty much any panel that had Mephisto in it was one of my favorite panels, because the artist just got to go fucking wild. And it's fucking amazing seeing all these different sorts of things that Mephisto does with his shape and size and all of the sorts of perspective and things. I really like the liberties that are taken with the art when he's in frame and on focus of the story and everything. Even in the simpler panels that, you know, like when Doom is betraying him and everything, just... I love the attention to detail, and especially how the whole art style kind of shifts to a little bit more of a surreal one when they're in Mephisto's realm. Everything seems a little bit more... I don't know how to put it. It's taken
surreal?
To a different level. Yeah, surreal. That's a perfect word for it, but I was trying to think of a different one without using that word again. But it's taken to this whole different level, and it's just... It's visibly different, and I love that because it shows you that this is a different plane of existence. And it's controlled by Mephisto. And the art style becomes very, almost chaotic. The shading is very, very jarring, but in a good way. It doesn't look bad. And the lines are very distinct and sharp. And there's much more definition here. But it's all very chaotic, the scene that's printed anywhere in all of Mephisto's realm. Like when they're getting attacked by demons everywhere. Everything feels unsettling in the art style almost. I love it. It's just brilliant.
Oh, yeah, you nailed it. And I think how the art is handled with all the magic in general just looks so good. It never comes across as, like, extremely flashy, but at the same time, there's a feeling of definite power to it, you know? It doesn't feel like Cyclops is randomly zapping somebody with his optic blast. Which, that was great.
Truth be told, that's kind of half of Cyclops' appeal, though, is random optic blasts. I mean, everybody here has played Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
Yeah, I hate that son of a bitch.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
But I do have to agree, though, the magic does come across as powerful and just, it's done in very broad strokes, and the coloring is very simple, and that's what I think really conveys this feeling of power. It doesn't feel like, you know, if you look at any old JRPG or a manga, for example, the magic tends to be either overdone or very, very subtle.
Right.
And in this, it's given the perfect balance between being mundane and magic at the same time.
Now, this is going to sound like a stupid comparison, but this was one of the things I thought the Harry Potter movies got right, too, the way magic is portrayed. You know, it's very kind of, like, rough, and you know, it's not just this, oh, it's a dainty little wave of the wand, and I think that's what the book gets right. It's very visceral and very, you know, it's atypical, and it succeeds in that regard.
But yeah, there was another thing that really stuck out to me was the retelling of both characters' origins. Like, they were the pretty much classic versions of Strange and Dooms, you know, coming into their role. But, like, you're looking at Doom's story, you know, which everybody reads it from, like, Fantastic Four, so it's really a heavy emphasis on his science background. This, the character Boris, really goes to point out Doom is a master of all sciences. He's, like, got degrees out the wazoo and expertise. And he does magic.
Yeah, and if anything, it goes to show, you know, it really illustrates how driven Doom is, just almost to insane levels. I mean, I don't think you could really call him insane, but, you know, but it probably would seem insane to a normal person, is what I'm saying.
And I have a question for you folks. Would you say that Doom's drive to be not just a magician of sorts and, you know, a scientist, you know, would you say that those drives were very much to kind of like, you know, of course, to take over Latveria, but was his taking over of Latveria, do you think, motivated by his mother in a way? And father in the way they were taken from him?
Possibly from the beginning. Probably that was his ultimate. I think ultimately Doom, I think it's been demonstrated over the years that Doom believes he is the only human being capable of ruling the Earth. And that's in
right.
his mind. And yeah, probably you get the jumping off point from the death of his parents and the fact that he's a gypsy and gypsies are, you know, even in real life, gypsies are treated like shit. But, yeah, it really does demonstrate where that egomania originates.
Right.
Well, let's not forget part of the bargain that Doom's mother made was that her son, Mephisto said her son could be the most powerful, you know, rise up above all of this. And be a king. So there is egomania there, but there's also kind of a predestination through Mephisto's words.
It's kind of funny because in a way, Mephisto almost seals his own fate by tempting Doom with the promise of ultimate power and whatnot. And it's really funny that he would do that to himself, but it goes to show just his very chaotic nature.
Check it out. This just occurred to me. Part of the deal was that Doom would rise up, right? And then Doom himself cost Mephisto the soul that got Doom there in the first place. Just think about that. That's like Doom gave him the ultimate fuck you.
Well, yeah, it, at the close of the novel, you have Doctor Strange wondering if this was Doom's master plan all along. Did he go into this expecting all of this to happen?
Right.
And it really does say, you know, Doctor Doom really is a kind of a has a Batman level of preparedness which goes along with that that drive and that and that egomania on top of that. Who else but an egomaniac of Doom's level would think himself able to pull one, attempt to pull one over on the devil, let alone actually pull it off?
See, I have to disagree with Strange's thoughts, for one reason. There's only two people ever that Doom has shown love and affection for. His mother and Valeria, up until he killed her. But, yeah, he's a mama's boy.
Right. But I do think that, you know, Doom, being Doom, you know, I think he did fully expect this whole thing, because, and think back how far that stretches too. He shows up at this sorcerer's tournament of sorts, and kind of, you know, manipulates his way into, or the implication being that he manipulates his way into receiving a boon, you know, that's fully, you know, that's fully equipped to kind of like give him what he's been wanting, you know, all his life and shit. It's, I mean, the implications of that, of Stephen Strange's question, is just, it's mind-blowing, and it really does cement Doom as being one of the bigger masterminds, and like you said, kind of like Batman levels of preparedness, you know? You know, the character that just, you know, is just so on top of everything in the Marvel Universe.
And there's another thing that makes me think that Strange may not be right. Why would Doom put somebody over himself? You know, why would Doom put Strange over just so Strange would have to owe him? Strange actually winds up with, you know, almost a boon from Doom in a way.
Well, because that you have to look at the full history of Doom, and it's revealed so many times that Doom is really a chess master. He will not only make plans that take years to unfold, but he will consider all the options, including letting someone else have something that he might need. Let's just think of it as a step. Maybe, you know, letting Doctor Strange become Sorcerer Supreme is just one step in another master plan, if you think about it.
See, I'm going to be the odd man out here, and I'm going to kind of say, I think I'm more agreeing with Jason, but I think really what ended up going on here was Mephisto ended up fucking himself over. He said that Doom would rise up above all and would be, you know, very all-powerful and everything. What I think Mephisto ended up accidentally doing with that, with his promise, that the way that he worded it, he was bound by his own word, so he even had Doom surpass him. He pulled one over on the devil because Mephisto had already said that he was going to rise up and be above all. He promised this power to him, so you see him literally pull one over on the devil. I mean, that's, you know, rising up above everybody, the ultimate, you know, user of magic, as it were. And that's, you know, just my thoughts on it.
And I think that factors into Doom's plan, because who other than, you know, who would be more of an egomaniac, a prideful egomaniac, than a man who has godhood? Or a god himself, or a god in its own right. I think he expected Mephisto would not expect him to backstab him in that way, or put one over on him. I think, you know, it comes with that egomania that godhood sort of feeds, you know, that you don't see the little things. You know what they say about how governments and corporations, that they'll do well about destroying each other, but a lot of times they have problems with small threats because they're like a hammer trying to kill a fly. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That does make sense. So you think Mephisto just fucked himself?
I think Mephisto fucked himself, and I think Doom had planned that Mephisto would be so prideful and arrogant that he wouldn't see it coming. That he would assume that Doom would trade his soul and not have an angle, because he's so desperate to get his mother back.
And the thing is, while he is desperate, he does not act out of that desperation. He always comes cold and calculated, and very, very just blank slate demeanor about it.
And that's the brilliance, I think, of the plan, because at that moment when he's made that, when Mephisto steps forward and makes the offer, Doom does seem like he's losing his cool, and he's so desperate that he's willing to take him up on the bargain. And I don't think that, and obviously Doom is acting and right into letting Mephisto play right into his hands with the one thing that he knew Mephisto would do, trying to bargain for his mother's soul.
And really, when you get down to it, Doom poker faced the shit out of Mephisto.
Yeah.
And you know, he had to provide, and that's why he needs to lose to Stephen Strange, because he needs to provide a very what better gift would the devil want than the Sorcerer Supreme?
What better decoy would you want than the guy who beats you?
Exactly.
I mean, it really was one of Doom's best plans, and oh my god. And, Daryl, you actually said something earlier to me in, this normal team speak that stuck with me. I think it was you. It was either you or Dick. That the artwork is only as good as the inker and the shader.
Oh, that wasn't me.
That was me.
But that is very true.
Yeah, that was you, Dick, yeah.
In a lot of ways, that is very much true.
And in this, it's perfect. The inking is great. All the lines are transferred very well. There's not any overuse of marking or lines or anything except for where it's intended. The colors are gorgeous. They're all picked out perfectly. Everyone is represented really well. It's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
And let me just echo something that Dick said earlier. Particularly the images of Mephisto expressing his power and his anger and his godhood were so well done. It was you know, literally you had the feel you were dealing with the anti-god himself.
And the fantastic thing about that was that depending on what the artist was trying to convey, you would, you know, like Dick kind of touched on this earlier, is that, you know, the way Mephisto was rendered would change from page to page depending on what was needed. And it's that kind of imagination, rather than sticking to a strict template, it's allowing, you know, the character to kind of speak through your art, you know, that I found very, very effective in the book. And that actually, you know, goes for the entire thing too, you know. There's panels when Doctor Strange is reliving his past, because there is, you know, that part that Jason kind of mentioned earlier, it was kind of a demon-induced illusion, and he relives his past. The stuff in that was just really well done, and you know, so that kind of thread, you know, it's more evident in Mephisto, but it does carry through the entire book, where the characters are rendered to the tone of the story at the time, rather than to a strict adherence to form and figure, and it's really effective.
And it really does show the how over time sort of demonic Faustian figure has been shown to be a master manipulator as well, where he's actually taking showing Doctor Strange his own origin, but then he's twisting it to say that he wasn't good enough to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's something really interesting about this, is there's always been two great manipulators in Marvel. Mephisto and Doom. And seeing them play off each other, and having Doom get one over on the devil, I think this kind of goes back to an almost inverse of last year's Secret Wars, Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I would have to agree, Loki is the third best manipulator, but Doom and Mephisto are the top two. Like, I can't rank one above the other.
Yeah, but I had to be remiss not to include Loki in that list.
Right. But hey, Mephisto actually convinced Peter Parker to give up his marriage.
Right? But, like, Daryl, I know you read it. Doom got his version of it at the end of Secret Wars when he realized he wasn't good enough to be God.
Right.
So I feel like this is, like, I'm good enough to beat the devil, but I'm not good enough to be God. Where the fuck do I sit, you know?
Right.
And I feel like that's a really good deconstruction of Doom as a character.
Yeah. I can kind of see that, man. for sure. Because he's all about those power plays and being the best at everything and having that ego drive him so much so that he harbors this insane hatred for Reed Richards, who's arguably is better in some ways, you know. So some ways perhaps, but or at least this is the way Doom perceives him, you know. And he would never admit it, but
if you think about it, Doom is, you know, Doom is a perfect illustration of the sin of pride. I mean, he believes himself to be, you know, I don't know if he thinks he's a worthy. He doesn't think himself worthy of godhood like Thanos does, but he does believe that he's the only solution to the world's problems and probably the universe's problems of that. So I, you know, what else can you say about it? Oh man, the right. Pride defines him, and pride right. has the, you know, pride is often the cornerstone of the whole road to hell is paved with good intentions. So you know, which is something else as well, just defined in this novel.
Well, yeah, exactly. And going back to what Jason was mentioning, you know, Secret Wars is the perfect kind of embodiment of Doom's ego. You know, the fact that he thought he and he alone had the right and the responsibility to shape an entire universe, you know, and in the end realized that, oh, maybe he doesn't, you know.
So. And I wanted to point out one other thing, because I mentioned that the comparison between Doom and Lex Luthor that often comes up in discussions, because Lex Luthor, you know, in comparison, he's the perfect illustration of greed. You know, he wants everything for himself, and he got to the point where he actually became an Orange Lantern when only one person technically could be the Orange Lantern, so you could imagine how that worked out. But, you know, you look at Doom in the other sense, Doom is like, they seem so similar on the surface, these two characters, but when you get down into their motivations, you see Doom is motivated by pride, whereas Lex Luthor is clearly motivated by greed, no matter how much either of them claims to be. You know, Lex Luthor will claim that he's about good, but he's really only about himself. And whereas Doom will claim to be about good, but if pride gets ahead of him, and he, you know, he's more than willing to throw people onto the bus to get to where he believes the world should be.
Well said.
Yeah, Doom. Doom is a character I could go on about forever. I fucking love him. Mm-hmm. There's always been one thing about him though that always struck me. I think it comes into play in this. I think Doom wanted to be at that tournament because Doom wanted to prove, not to others and himself, that he actually was a sorcerer on their level. Because Doom, above all, wants to win the world over his way. Through what he earns himself. He doesn't want it handed to him.
Well, I think I can agree with that, but I think also, you know, a motivating factor for him being there was just to you know, put himself in a position to get what he wanted. You know, and like I think it was Jamie who was saying it earlier, you know, he is perfectly willing to give up something in the short term to get something in the long term. So I think just as much as proving to himself that he was, you know, a worthy sorcerer was just being there to be the recipient of that boon, you know, so he could go and get what he wanted.
Well, to quote Jeremy Irons in Die Hard 3, life has its little bonuses.
Right. Yeah. And Doom's so multifaceted that it very well could be a combination of those things, you know? That's what's so fascinating about Doom. You know, you can never really take for granted what he's doing until usually the end game, and then it almost always plays out in a way you don't expect. That it's true to the character for sure, but it's always, you know, like Doom was thinking, you know, 20 moves ahead of everyone else. You know?
And it's weird. I mean, as cartoony as the idea of Dr. Doom is, he really plays out like a Hannibal Lecter-esque character. Where, you know, he's got this cold, detached look at the world. What he views is right, what he views is wrong, and he will enforce that. Any means necessary. They're both vastly intelligent men, and they've both, you know, are viewed as crazy by the rest of the world, but in a way that cannot be diagnosed. I mean, Doom, it has always, in my mind, drawn parallels.
Oh, well, like I said earlier, you know, Doom is clearly an egomaniac. I mean, I think that that's obvious. And like I said, that plays into the fact that he's, like I said, a perfect illustration of the sin of pride. But whether you consider that crazy, I think, you know, it has. I'm sure Doom doesn't think he's crazy. You know, I think you know, generally the psychiatric Bible would consider him crazy, but you know, again, that comes from a perspective, you know.
Right. Doom's mind, he is doing what he needs to do.
Now, what about, you know, we've talked a lot about Doom. We got a little bit of time left. What about Strange? I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on the character?
I feel like, you know, I admit that Strange is not a character I'm very familiar with. I think this has gave me a good chance to get familiar with him as a character. It was a really good, if you want to learn more about Doctor Strange, this is a really good story to jump into, because it really does kind of set him as, you know, when he goes back at his original origins of him being a surgeon. It does show that he has a kind of a Tony Stark-esque mentality, where he was a rich man who didn't want to maybe not so much a Tony Stark mentality, but yeah, he is a rich man and he was more concerned with his own success than his patients' health. It really just shows, you know, it has, you know, you look through his the prism of what he has to go through to become that. He has to actually have the nerve damage to hurt his hands and like think of it from the patient's perspective. And that kind of thing helps define the character, gives him his view of the world.
What I really like about this, though, is I have to agree with Jamie. This is definitely a good spot to learn about Doctor Doom, or Doctor Strange, pardon me. Little slip up there. We've been talking so much about Doom. I literally knew very little about Strange, except for he's Sorcerer Supreme and that he's weird and occulty. And that's pretty much all I knew about him. And getting to see his origin story like this, I'm definitely interested in the character. I thought at first it was just going to be kind of a lame copy-outy, ooh, we've got, you know, a sorcerer as a character, kind of lame, as it were. And it seems like he definitely has a lot more of an interesting storyline and things that deal with different sort of subjects than your standard Marvel comic would. It's not your standard sort of superhero defeats the villain kind of a thing. It's very out there, and it's definitely something I would be interested in, especially since we just read The Invisibles. It gives me kind of a vibe of that, but not so much as the extreme end of the world scenario as it is where it's just a cult and weirdness and, you know, magic, and there's these different planes of existence and stuff like that. So it's very interesting to see that side of Marvel exists, and it makes me want to go and explore some of his other stories.
Now, for me, I thought the Doctor Strange portion, you know, of the book was the weakest, which doesn't make it bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that I thought the Doom stuff was so much more fascinating. And to me, Doctor Strange just served as a vehicle to move Doctor Doom from to where he needed to be in the story. So, you know, and I agree with Jamie in that, like, you know, his backstory is very fascinating if you're not familiar with it. And I do think there is enough meat here that if you like what you see, you know, it gives a good, you know, jumping off point to familiarize yourself with the character. But I thought in terms of the story beats, he definitely kind of took a backseat to Doom, at least in terms of my interest in what was going on in the story. And I felt he was more of a vehicle to kind of drive things. So, it was still good stuff. And, you know, and if you're not familiar with it, like Dick here, you know, the occult stuff is really kind of neat. And seeing Doctor Strange's role in that, you know, I can imagine is very cool. But, yeah, for me, being more familiar with the character and whatnot, you know, I think I wanted a little bit more. I did think it was kind of cool to see him become Sorcerer Supreme here and whatnot, but after that, he did seem to kind of take a backseat to Doom to my mind, so I was a little less impressed with that part of the story.
Well, I think it actually works in that regard, because, first of all, Dr. Doom, being able to frame it through his perspective actually is a good way to frame it for the audience's perspective. And especially if you think about Doctor Strange is practically the polar opposite of Doom. Whereas seeding pride is what made Doctor Doom. Doctor Strange basically had to learn the opposite lesson. He had to learn humility to become to get to the point that he was, and it's demonstrated in that challenge for this title of Sorcerer Supreme. He wasn't even interested in the title itself,
right?
But you know, he was the only one there who even thought, you know, maybe a frontal approach here isn't the best approach. Let me look at it from a different perspective. And that humble mind that lets him do what no one else there thought to do. And I think that's a it's a perfect vehicle for the audience to view through, you know, as he's learning just as much about Doom as we are.
Sure. And I do agree that there were some really cool story beats in there, you know. It seemed like the latter half of the book, he definitely became more of a vehicle for Doom. And that was the thing. There was so much interesting stuff loaded up at the front. And then after a while, he kind of felt to me like a guest in the book more than the, you know, one half of the focus.
There's the thing about characters. Some of them, they still may be great characters, but they don't work well as the primary focus.
Sure.
I feel Doctor Strange is one of them. I've read some of his solo stuff, and it never really stuck to me. But you put him with somebody else, and you get a memorable story out of it.
At least, I can agree.
At least you can get a good memorable story out of it. But on his own, he just does not work too well. And I think that's been a problem Marvel's had over the years with, you know, he did have a very long-running series at one point, Journey into Mystery, that became Doctor Strange, etc., etc. But in the more recent years, he's had, you know, starts and stops, miniseries, attempted series, reboot of the attempted series, so on and so forth.
And you know, that's kind of a shame, because I think, you know, maybe what they just need is the right writer who could know how to use... Because you have to admit, Strange is a very powerful set of tools to work with. And, like, on the level of, like, say, Superman, it's probably not the best comparison, but he needs to have a threat that works against it. And I think when you have that framing device of attempting to remain the humble self that he is when having to wield, you know, such great power. And maybe that's kind of what they do well with Spider-Man, but the question is, is it possible to take that to a level that Strange is at, where you're dealing with cosmic or, you know, planar threats?
Yeah, Strange is one of those comics that, written correctly, should be shaping Marvel Comics.
You'd think.
Right.
That's something that Marvel could definitely use these days.
DC's been great with the occult, you know, they have great occult characters, you know, like the one we all know and love, you know. Fucking can't remember his name, John Constantine.
Hellblazer, motherfucker.
Yes, and shit like that. But Marvel, you know, they've got a character that is ripe for that kind of storytelling. And, you know, my experience is admittedly limited, but it seems like outside of, like, stories like these, he's underutilized. And I kind of felt that was the case here, too. Like, you know, the front end of the book was fantastic. And it established, you know, like Jamie said, it established his character and showed you that more than power, this is a guy who, you know, just he just wants to be, you know, he wants to help, you know, and stuff like that. But the back end just felt kind of, like you said, you know, it was still overall a really great book. And I really enjoyed it, and I do think that as kind of a vehicle for Doom, you know, it worked, you know. But yeah, anyway, sorry, kind of rambling there.
Well, yeah, and I think you hit some really good points, and I think for me the takeaway is kind of somewhere along the lines of what Jamie said, Doom and Strange are polar opposites. I mean, what if Doom hadn't become such a prideful bastard? He might have been something like Strange became. What if Strange had kept his pride? He might have become what Doom became. You know, I mean, these are characters that are one small step apart from each other, but so drastically different. And then, strangely, close to the same scale of magical power. But we gotta say, in the end, Doom, technologically, you know, so far beyond Strange, but, you know, that's Doom. Doom is Doom.
Right.
You know, there's one thing I want to point out it's a light, maybe slightly unrelated, but I think it's something I want to get into. This comic came out in 89, which I think was definitely a few years after Marvel ditched the Comics Code Authority label. And I think this is definitely evident of the kind of renaissance that comics went through in the 80s. Because you couldn't have the kind of storytelling under the yoke of the Comics Code. Because they wouldn't allow... First of all, you wouldn't be allowed to have a villain like Doom who has noble intent. You wouldn't be allowed to have the occult. You wouldn't be allowed to have depictions of hell or anything like that. That's how restrictive that stupidity was.
Marvel had not ditched the code at the time. They wouldn't fully until like the mid-90s, late-90s, something like that. But being published under a graphic novel was how Marvel skirted the Comics Code.
Well, in that same vein, The Killing Joke was also a graphic novel, wasn't it?
For the same reasons.
And rather, to
the same benefit.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you think about it, The Killing Joke, it's like defines the age of the Comics Code yoke being thrown off collectively by the industry. And I think one of the sad things about comics today is that you're seeing companies like Marvel and DC willingly put that yoke on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's sad. I think it's ruining what they've become.
And it the saddest part of it is that they're looking at their audience and they're seeing it kind of dwindle. You know, comic sales are down and stuff, and they're willing to basically throw the baby out with the bathwater in the sense that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they no longer think that we're their audience simply because we might be getting our books through other means, you know, like this reeks of the whole Nielsen thing all over again, where, you know, where like different distribution methods aren't being taken into consideration and stuff. So yeah. I think, and they're looking at their dwindling audience or what appears to be a dwindling audience. And they're saying, well, they're not buying any comics anymore, so why continue to make stuff for them? But the sad thing is, if they did the inverse and gave us good stories and events only when the events make sense to have, and gave us more self-contained stuff like they used to, and really good, powerful stories, we might come back.
And just like television, which is fully embracing the internet now, comics could do the same thing if they wanted to.
Absolutely. 'Cause
I've seen how web comics have flourished. You know, not the bad, you know, you have every sort of level of quality in webcomics, but the really good ones always rise to the top. And the internet has been such a wonderful way to distribute them. And if only Marvel and DC and some of the others would just think about how they could use that rather than who they want their market to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, I think the takeaway here is this is definitely a good comic. And that people should definitely read it. And yeah,
agreed.
Art's amazing, story's solid. 10 out of 10 kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, definitely on the level of Infinity Gauntlet, I think, or at least close to it. Yeah.
I gotta say, in my opinion, I think it beats it. I really, really enjoyed this. Like I said, there was a few back-end issues with Strange, but it didn't kill the comic at all. It lessened his impact a little bit, I think. But beyond that, I mean, the whole thing was very solid, very entertaining, and very well worth a read, in my opinion.
But just a quick counterpoint, I think it really helps, because I think really it was Doom's comic, and Strange does provide the window, you know?
Yeah, and I can agree with that. That having that perspective now, if I go back and read it again, I'm sure, you know, I'll enjoy it quite a bit more.
Well, there you have it, folks. So go out and get your copy right now,
done listening to this, like the exact moment that this recording ends.
Go read it.
But yeah.
The exact moment this recording ends, you need to go and get a copy.
Yes.
All right. So, well, this has been Back Issues. I'm your host, Jason. With me has been Dick, Daryl, and Jamie. Hope y'all enjoyed it. Support your local comic shop, and have a good night.
Night.